Morning, everybody. Matt Bubala here with you on 720 WGN. Thanks so much for staying up later. Thanks to John and Esmeralda for hanging around and always being so much fun in Patty's absence. Roger Badish is up in the 7th floor newsroom. Good morning, Roger.
Oh, good morning, sir. How was your Thanksgiving?
It was wonderful. How was yours?
It was very good.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, it was very good.
What did you have too much of?
I behaved myself. excuse me. I had a little turkey.
Mm-hmm.
Had a little barbecue brisket.
Ooh, yeah. What's up with that?
Well, my daughter works for the company that owns Pit Barbecue.
Oh.
And so she got an employee discount and decided to bring we didn't have that many people, so brought enough for everyone there, and it was delicious.
Brought it home prepared, or you needed
to
prepare?
Yeah, it was all cooked. It was all cooked. Already. All you had to do was warm it up.
Brisket.
Had some stuffing, delicious homemade stuffing, had some mashed potatoes. I stayed away from the rolls.
Good boy.
I had a little of the gravy.
Okay.
And because I don't eat vegetables unless it's in my Caesar salad, I stayed away from the bean salad.
Okay. Well, that sounds pretty good.
Yeah, I did all right. And I had drank a good share of water, as I'm supposed to.
Okay.
And I stayed away from the snacks.
Good.
You know, those, what are the little golden fish, little...
Goldfish?
Goldfish, is that little...
That was one of your appetizers, was goldfish?
Well, they were sitting off on the side
sure.
in the plate, the multicolored ones.
They were there for the kids.
It wasn't the kids that were eating them.
Oh, clearly.
Yeah.
That's
and I used to gorge myself on those.
And goldfish, really?
Yeah, oh my God, I couldn't keep them in the house long enough, seriously.
That's interesting.
I'd buy the big bags.
I like goldfish, but it's not like, you know, Lay's chips that you just can't, you know, I could contain
myself.
It was
for me. I got
hooked
on them for a while. Yeah.
Wow.
I had to quit cold fish.
God. It was all that just to set that up.
Thank you. But yeah, we had a good time.
Well, good.
And then I packed up, they packed up a little. I didn't stay for dessert because I wanted to get some food back to Bridget and see how she was doing. So she got some pumpkin pie.
Mm-hmm.
And
so Bridget didn't come with?
She has been under the weather all week.
Oh,
she had 105 fever on Monday.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So
that's
a
fever.
She's been on antibiotics, and she didn't have a voice until about this morning. Actually, this afternoon or yesterday afternoon when she woke up, she finally had her voice back, and she looked like she was feeling a lot better. So, and her fever's been down for a couple of days.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that she went through that this week. That's never fun. It's hell getting old, Raj. I don't know if you knew that yet.
Darn tootin'.
Yeah. Yeah. So we started the day off with a little bit of football. My buddy Jim, who I work with, his family's hosted Thanksgiving games forever. Now that Jim is married, he only gets every other Thanksgiving at home. So that tradition kind of ended last year. But he hosted one out by our house this year. And I brought the boys out, and he had a bunch of friends there. So it was about 9-on-9.
Oh,
and
nice.
It was so much fun. But you just feel so old when you go out there once a year and throw a football around and try to run fast.
Sure.
Which you can't do anymore.
Short spurts like that.
You just don't do that. You get on a treadmill, you never do that stuff.
Yeah.
And then when you do it once a year, it's dangerous. But we got through it. Everybody survived.
Good.
We had fun. And Michael got an interception in the end zone.
Ooh.
Tommy scored a touchdown.
Nice.
I think Jack scored a touchdown. So it was a good day for everybody.
Beautiful.
And then we had our nice little Thanksgiving. And political talk only came up. I only had to walk away once, so that was good.
You controlled yourself.
I just walked away, said I'm not engaging.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go make another drink. I got Grandpa Henry in trouble from Grandma Mary Lynn because I kept serving him rum drinks. And she was worried he was going to get wasted before dinner.
Mm-hmm.
Which, of course, wouldn't happen with me bartending.
Yeah.
I made a good rum drink. Have you ever drink rum? I'm not a big rum drinker.
I made a drink with rum in college.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot what it was called. And you were supposed to, it had more than just rum in it, but rum was the main ingredient.
Sure.
And you were supposed to chill it. And it exploded.
On purpose? Or that was an accident?
That was an accident.
Here, let me give you this drink. Watch what happens.
No.
You threw a Mentos in it in the end?
I came back to the refrigerator to get it, to bring it to the party. It had exploded.
Oh, goodness.
I don't know what the heck happened.
Somebody mixed in their science experiment?
Could have been.
Days? Well, a friend through a friend taught me to use Bacardi Limon. So L-I-M-O-N. So I guess it's a lemon lime. I'm not sure. It's like a lemony Bacardi.
Interesting. Okay.
And it's really good. So I just mix that with like Sprite or Diet 7 Up and then some limes and lemons and mix it all up. And it's delicious. It's very refreshing. It's more of a summer drink. But I had the leftover limon, I decided let's try to use some of this up.
Okay.
So we drank that. And then the ladies all drank wine and we watched football. And I was good. I didn't eat too much of anything. If I eat, it's generally stuffing is what gets me. I love the stuffing.
Yeah.
And you just never have it otherwise. You know, it's really.
Of course.
Nobody makes stuffing.
But what's the majority of the stuffing is bread?
Yeah, it's just bread.
So,
you and know. Some onion and spice or whatever.
Yeah, we had some celery in ours. It was very
Yeah,
good.
I think there might be a little celery in there. It's really delicious. I love the stuffing. We made our biggest bird ever this year, 24 pounds.
Ooh. Big bird.
Big.
Yeah. And I don't mean the yellow one.
No, we wouldn't cook him because we like him. But we do this, I think I've talked about this before, but we try to do the trick where you turn the bird upside down before you bake it. And man, the difference that makes is insane in how juicy it is.
Mm-hmm.
But also when you take it out and start carving it up, it's like the meat just starts falling right off the bone.
Mm.
We tried to turn him back over
to
carve and it's very juicy. Very good.
Yeah.
Very good.
Nice.
So it was a nice day.
Well, that was good.
Yeah.
That was good.
It was good. Excellent. I spent the whole week cleaning the basement in preparation because our basement is just such a mess. And I took so much to donate and we have so much out on the curb tonight to throw away.
Really?
Oh my God, it's insane.
Well, this is, now you know what I've been going through for the past year.
I can't imagine.
It's just we had two huge storage lockers down in the basement, packed, ceiling to floor, side to side, front to back, with 36 years of stuff. And then my room and closet, and then the computer room and closet. In fact, I just got rid of the tools that I wasn't using anymore. Cody Goff, Brian's producer, wanted them. And I brought them in last Sunday for him.
Well, that's nice.
And I got rid of the shelf unit that was in there that held all the tools and everything else that I haven't used in years. And we now have a closet again in that room. So when our son comes back from Spain in a couple of weeks to stay for the holidays, he's got a room he can actually get into now.
How's he liking Spain, by the way?
It was a little rough just getting started, you know, being away from home again, even though he's traveled quite a bit over the last several years. But he's enjoying it. He's having a good time and, he loves the teaching that he's doing there and it's working out real good. So,
good.
You know, it'll be great to see him. I know Bridget, has just been, you know, just antsy as all get up.
I'm sure. Do you guys chat with him at all? Do you just email?
Yeah, we've FaceTimed him on the phone. I've taught Bridget how to do that. And I even showed him how I cleaned the room. I showed him the clean room that he could get back into now. He says, yeah, I moved your dresser that way. He says, yeah, well, I've been always meaning to do that. I says, well, you couldn't because all my crap was behind it, you know. So, it's she texts him all the time, and I've got that international plan on the phone. I got it when we went to Europe, and I just kept it. And so he's on our plan, so he's using that. And,
good.
Yeah, so it'll be nice to see him. And I think he's coming in probably second week of December, I think, something like that. So a couple of weeks.
And then will he go back?
Yeah, he's going to spend, he'll go back middle of January. He's got to go back for the next semester. So
cool.
Yeah.
You know what Friday was the greatest day ever for?
Friday.
So the day that just passed us.
Shopping?
Saturday. No. Well, I'm sure it was a good day for shopping.
Yeah.
Putting out your Christmas decorations. I mean, it was 60 degrees out.
Oh, I know. But on our block, tons of people have lights flashing and trees up already and decorated. Oh, yeah.
Already had them?
Oh, yeah.
Before Thanksgiving?
Oh, yeah. The trees were up. Here's on our block, when I go walking Rufus, I look around. We have a lot of apartment buildings. And I saw three lit trees up in front rooms before Thanksgiving. then the night of Thanksgiving, as I took them out, this one apartment building had put up and lit up their lights, the light decorations out in front. Extremely gaudy and flashing and everything. But, yeah, and they had that. So I'm sure more will follow now.
The flashing lights never make any sense to me. I don't understand the flashing lights.
I don't
lights.
Know. They're all different colors and patterns, and there's no rhyme or reason to it.
But it's like, unless you're trying to land a spaceship there,
I know.
You don't need the flash.
And if you're walking the dog and you stop and you look at it too long, you start having conniption fits. I mean, you really have to work hard not to look at it.
Now, I am okay with Thanksgiving night lighting things up. I was fine with that. In fact,
after dinner.
Yeah, okay. I'll give you that. I'll give you that. The night. Well, when night hits, you know, if you're not eating until 6:30 and it's already dark, you can't really
light it. We ate at like 4.
And we didn't end up eating until 6:30 because of Colleen's brother and when he could come and stuff like that.
Oh, okay.
But I, so today I put out the lights and then I lit them and I got yelled at. It's too early. I said, no, it's the day after Thanksgiving and now it's in.
Yeah.
And if I would have had them done on Thanksgiving, I would have lit them last night. I wouldn't have the day before, even if I already had them. Say we knew there was a huge snowstorm coming this weekend.
And you wanted to get it out of the way.
And like on Tuesday, it was going to be 60. I would have done it on Tuesday, but I wouldn't have lit them yet. I would have waited till Thanksgiving night.
Okay.
Colleen, wrong with that. Colleen refuses to listen to that radio station that plays all the Christmas music until the day after Thanksgiving. You know how they always kick it on like first week of November?
Early. Yeah.
It's banned when she is in the car.
Oh, okay. Well, who wants to listen to it before then?
Jack will listen to it. He drives to school now. He listens to it all the way there at home. Okay. I'll turn it on. Why not get more? Why restrict ourselves to 25 days or 30 days? I think it's okay to have a little longer bit of joy in your life. I mean, I know it's annoying that the stores have Christmas stuff before Halloween and things like that. I agree with that. But, you know, if you want to listen to the music, listen to the music. Get yourself in the spirit. It's too short. It's a nice time of year when generally we're nice to each other.
Some more of that rum, I'm getting
some rum. Some rum doesn't hurt either.
Yeah.
Okay. Speaking
of,
I don't know how
spirit,
I'm going to turn to this next topic. Coming up after the news, how to get out of that credit card debt by becoming an exotic dancer.
What?
Yeah. Our friend, our friend Carrie Walker wrote a book called Fearless, An Exotic Dancer's Guide to Personal and Professional Success. She had a bunch of credit card debt. She wanted to live overseas. School debt and wanted to live overseas. What's she going to do? Quickest way to make a lot of money? Exotic dancing. So she did it and she got to do what she wanted. She'll tell you how to do it. And I wonder, I'm going to ask her this. Do you think, like, seasonally, a lot of, you know, Target hires people, UPS hires people?
Oh, yeah. Sure.
I wonder if there are people who, you know, could do that for a living if they wanted to, but they don't want to because they have a regular job or they have whatever. They just don't like the idea. But come the holidays, they're like, you know.
Well, for the, you know, sure, the holiday.
I'll do it for a month
parties.
And I'll make a.
You know, office parties and
there's
and
office
stuff.
Parties hiring exotic dancers? Where the hell have you worked?
Not at places that have hired exotic dancers.
I missed that.
Okay, I don't even think anyone companies have Christmas parties anymore.
I'm just thinking like at the clubs or where exotic dancers normally work. I wonder if some of them try to pick up hours, you know, at certain times of year because you need money.
What, there would be more business that would require hiring more dancers?
I don't know that that's the case, but maybe just they need a dancer and this is the time of year I'll do it. We'll ask her. We'll find out about it after the news. Next, 720 WGN. 2:30 in the morning, we're going to chat with an author about a book on how to make money exotic dancing. After we check the news headlines upstairs, there's Mr. Roger Badish. Thank you very much, Roger. Matt Bubala here with you on 720 WGN. Joining us on the phone right now is Carrie Walker. She's the author of Fearless, An Exotic Dancer's Guide to Personal and Professional Success. Hey, Carrie, how are you doing?
Hi, Matt. Thank you for having me on. Doing well, thank you.
You doing okay? You were supposed to be on a couple of weeks ago. What happened? Did you fall asleep? It's probably a little late. Are you in New York?
I did, yes. I'm a little embarrassed to say that I slept through. I'm in New York. It's only 1 hour later, and I have a schedule that keeps me up at night, so I have no excuse, but yeah, that's what happened.
I was going to say, now, are you still dancing, Carrie? Do you still dance, or is that long behind you?
No, I'm dancing still, and sending resumes out like almost every day for editing jobs, but still dancing for the time being.
All right, so let's go back to the beginning. Let's go back to the beginning. So you graduate from college, and you spent the next year, was it traveling Europe? Is that what you did?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So I was mostly in France for a year. I was an au pair. And then after that, I had dreaded coming home. I have a terrible family life. I've had issues since I was like a kid. So I dreaded coming home, and I took all these jobs that were kind of like just trying to get out of my house.
Sure.
But I wasn't exactly passionate about. So I had a series of jobs that I didn't like, and I didn't really stick, and I didn't like make progress in any of them. So I would do a job for at most, like I had an editing job for a year, and I mean, it was honestly to try and like stay out of my house. And I pursued a master's in French, accumulated $20,000 in debt, and again, kept ending back at square one, like ending up back up at my parents' house. So I was kind of thinking, well, I should back up. You know, like I like the editing job. I like the French master's. It's just, I mean, I felt like I had no like nest, like
yeah.
No safety net, actually. Like, so I thought like, okay, if anything happens to me, I need like some sort of security. So I thought, my initial thought was like, I need to make money in case anything happens. I, you know, if I lose a job, I have like some time to find a new job.
Yeah.
Money to pay rent, whatnot.
Now, I thought maybe I read this wrong, but I thought that you traveled and then you came back home and your goal was, I got to get back overseas. And this was the only way to really earn enough money to be able to do that, to move back overseas.
Well, there was that too. It was like both, because I had to tackle both things.
Did you have a bunch of college debt too carrying around?
I did. Well, yeah. I was actually really lucky. My dad paid for my bachelor's, but I accrued debt from going for the master's. So I paid that back like right after I got it, basically. And then it took me 6 months. I was a live-in nanny because I figured if I'm a live-in nanny, I didn't have to pay rent or car or anything. So that's what I did for 6 months.
And you were able to pay off your master's within 6 months?
A little over 6 months.
That's really good.
I didn't complete the master's.
Oh.
So I sound like the most... you're
a little all over the place, like, Carrie. And I understand you're young and you're trying to figure out what you want to do with your life, right? I mean, that's how people are.
Yeah. Yeah, so it was very all over the place. So I still feel all over the place, but that was the general gist of my 20s. So
So you go to college, you get the degree, then you go overseas, then you come back and you do the master's? Is that the timeline?
I started the master's. Yeah, I started the master's.
Okay.
I guess there was like a little bit of time to build up courage to go for a master's. Like I did a couple jobs, but I mean, they were just jobs. Like I got comfortable living at my parents' house too. I was like, cause they're on the Jersey Shore, and I was just like, this is nice, and I'll enjoy it a little bit. And the economy wasn't so great. It was like 2009, like right after the recession. So I was kind of like, all right, I'll just, you know, put resumes out, but also, like, enjoy my time at my parents' house. I was a little bratty and doing that. And then I decided, all right, I would like to do, what do I like? I like learning French, and I think it would be cool to be a teacher. And so that's what prompted me to go for the master's, but...
Why did you stop going?
Yeah, like,
why did you drop out of the master's program?
Well, I was 6 months in and $20,000 in debt, and it scared me because I was like, you know, I'm not going to get out of this, and I'm not going to be able to pay back. And, you know, I'm going to be, I don't know if being a French teacher, if I'll be able to find a job as a French teacher, because there's a huge need for, like, native French speakers, too. Mm-hmm. And I just didn't do enough research, I think, on it. So it was kind of.
So you started doubting that. You drop out of the program. You take a nanny job. You pay off your master's within about 6 months. And you're taking other jobs, but nothing is that appealing. You're not finding your passion. How do you decide, okay, then I'm going to do exotic dancing or stripping? It's got to be about money, right? It can't be like, or could it be like, hey, I've danced in the past. This will be fun. I mean, did you think it was something you'd really enjoy doing? Or did you think just, all right, that's the quickest way to make money. I'm going to make money.
It was all about money. Sure. I was so scared. Like I had never even set foot inside a strip club. My dancing skills were horrible. Like, so I just Googled like what makes a lot of money. The first thing that popped up was like porn. I was like, no. And then the second thing was I noticed there were a huge trend of young girls like putting themselves through school and paying off debt and doing all these things with dancing. And I thought that would be a really good solution because, you know, I liked the things I liked editing. I liked going for the French masters. I liked going abroad. I was really grateful that my dad had paid for my bachelor's. But again, I mean, it was more like I needed money for security because, I mean, when you don't have like when you come from a family with issues, you have a lot of anxiety, which there's a lot of that with me, and there's no security to go back to. I mean, my family doubted me the whole time, every step of the way. You know, you can't do this, you can't do that, and then it's a circular thing. They'll put this anxiety into your head, and then they'll be like, "Well, you're a coward for not doing these things." So it's like, all right, so I need to get away. So I was like, "How do I get away?" And just I built up so much courage just from being on my own, and I saved $100,000 in a year, which I put in my book Fearless.
Holy
and
cow.
Yeah, I was really determined. So,
all right, what year was this? What year did you first start exotic dancing?
I was 28. I'm 31 now, so
3 years ago.
I'm a late starter. So it was 3 years ago.
Yeah, I imagine 28 is late to start exotic dancing.
It is, but there's a lot of girls in their 30s, but I'm not, you know, I think it's better to do it earlier. I just didn't, and the idea never came in my head in my early 20s. Like, I was too busy doing all my exploring every other avenue. So I definitely started late.
All right, So if in your first year, and I know you wrote in the book, and again, the book is Fearless, An Exotic Dancer's Guide to Personal and Professional Success. So you mentioned you make $100,000 and you're trying to avoid the pitfalls of a lot of the other girls you see who drink too much or they get involved in drugs or they're wasting all their money. You're being very good about trying to stay very focused, kind of got the blinders on. I'm going to go. I'm going to dance. I'm going to bank my money. I'm going to get the hell out. So in the first year, you make $100,000. 3 years later, why are you still exotic dancing?
Well, New York City is kind of an expensive city. So I guess that's a good question. A little bit nervous about jumping in. I mean, I'm putting out resumes now and seeing what I get back. The problem is I don't have a lot of experience on my resume. So I have to.
And does your resume say that you've been dancing or what are you putting down for the last 3 years?
It doesn't say that I've been dancing. I have to deal with that. Like if somebody asked me, I would definitely probably say that I've done dancing. Like,
well,
if it,
Carrie, you have a book out. So
yeah,
I would imagine most people look people up online these days and they're going to figure it out pretty quick, right?
I say definitely probably because if somebody asked me, but I wouldn't bring it up because they're going to find my book online. So for you Google it, it's there.
Yeah.
So if somebody asked me, of course. Yeah. And I'll just tell them the positives about it. But, yeah, it's hard, Matt. It is hard. Like, the job seeking process is hard for me right now.
Well, I would guess also that once you start making $100,000, no matter what it is that you're doing, whether you love it or hate it, it's very hard to give that up because if you want to become an editor right now for maybe a small magazine or something, that's probably like maybe not New York City, but here in Chicago, my guess is starting out, that would be a $30,000 to $35,000 a year job.
Yeah, it's not much more in New York. It's like $40,000 to $50,000 in New York.
So so you'd at least be cutting your revenue in half, and that would be very difficult to do, I would think.
Oh yeah. I mean the money is addicting, and it's definitely what I mentioned. It's what I mentioned in my book, and I feel like if I don't stop dancing soon, then I'm a hypocrite because the point is to not become addicted to money, to get out, to get it and then get out.
So
and
you made $100,000 in your first year. How much have you made in the next 2 years? Are you still able to bring home about $100,000 a year?
I'm working less so because I'm sending out resumes and working on finding a job. So I'm working less than I was. I was working like 5 days a week. Now I'm working like 3 or 4 days a week, and I take time off. And so I'm making less, but I'm still making
way more than you would be otherwise.
Exactly. Yeah. Unfortunately, I don't budget as well. Like, I don't keep track as to the T anymore, but I'm definitely still comfortable. I'm still able to save.
Do you have a lot in the bank?
But, I mean, it's funny because it's like, I thought I had a lot of money until you start looking at things to do. Like, I thought, oh, okay, maybe I'll look at a house now, right? And that, like, put me back into, it's like getting punched in the face in New York. You're like,
yeah,
you think
sure.
You have a lot of money? And you're like, oh, no, I do not have a lot of money. They're like, you're going to have to go way out in New Jersey to look into a house. I was like, oh, okay. But, and I still couldn't. It's still, I mean, New Jersey's really nice. But, I didn't have as much as I think. I'll put it that way. and I don't touch it. I pretend it's not mine. So, I also broke my wrist in
dancing?
February. No, not that. Oh, okay. That would be so embarrassing. It was skiing. So I had to, that put me back a bit because I had to take off for a couple of months. But I still have a lot in the bank. But and then I tried to replenish everything that I lost from skiing, which I've almost done. So I still have almost $100,000 in the bank, so saved like for security, and then I just gotta just make the jump. My friends are all over me too. They're like, you know, it's time, and we'll help you with your resume and get it out there and get networking and all that good stuff. One friend suggested, he was like, well, maybe you should try like boot camp for coding because it's coding offers more. And I was like, I don't know, I've never done that before, so I think it could be, I don't know how it would be. So I don't know. The point is that my friends are all trying to help me out and point me in the right direction too. So
I can totally understand where it'd be tough though, because this is what you've been doing. You're making a lot of money doing it. And and you, if you leave, you won't make that money, and so you'll be scared about that. Could you take a job and still dance a little bit, or would that be impossible to try to do both, do you feel?
That's what my friend said, to do that too.
Kind of wean yourself
hard.
Off?
It would be hard, but I think that's the thing to do. Like, it would be hard just because I don't want to have, like, a defeatist attitude, but it would be hard because you're working at night some days and then you're working in the morning some days, so it's like sometimes it takes me like a couple days to get back to the normal day routine.
Now you talk about that somewhat in the book about the different shifts and where the money really is. When you first went to check out a strip club, you went early in the day and you had to dance then early in the day, but that's not where the money is, right? You want to be at night, correct?
Yeah, you want to be at night. Some girls work during the day because it's they have to, but it's better to work at night. That's where all the money is, definitely.
But even after 3 years, you sometimes still work during the day?
No, only at night.
You just have trouble reacclimating to the day? Like because you have to dance till how late at night? Till 3 or 4 in the morning sometimes?
Till 4 in the morning. New York's open till 4.
Okay, so that would be tough to then go to the day job at 9 a.m., I guess.
Yeah, because then you get home, because I live in a borough, like in Queens, so it's by the time I get home, go to sleep, wake up at 1. So, yeah, it's difficult, but I guess, my friends are like maybe 2 days a week and then, 3 days a week doing a day job.
But that's so hard. That's very hard to do, though, isn't it? Because you're on a routine where you're kind of up at night and asleep during the day. It's not easy to reverse how your body feels about that within 1 day. So you could then go to 3 days of being up at 7 in the morning.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think it's difficult to do that. Really difficult. I know it is. It takes me, I didn't work a couple days for Thanksgiving. I'm saying a couple of days. I didn't work a week for Thanksgiving. And it took me till the middle of the week to start getting up early again. So, so I know for a fact it takes a couple of days. Like, it's not just, you're killing your body if you're telling it. But it's also, my friend was saying that it's not good to be up at night all the time. Like, it's isolating and it causes depression. And so that's what's really motivating me. That's what's going to be, I have to change my lifestyle, I think. Like, just, right now I live by myself. Get a roommate, pay lesser rent. Work a weekend job if I have to. I mean, those are the things you have to do to get out of it. It's just, the people in New York do it, get roommates and live a cramped lifestyle and just
so Carrie,
work their way up.
Now, you wrote in the book that you tried, especially when you started out, to not let your parents know you were doing this. Now you've written a book about it, so they must know that you dance, right?
They know. Yep.
And
they know.
How's that going?
We never had a very good relationship. So, that doesn't help.
I'm sure.
But it's like nothing's changed. Like, we didn't talk anyway. We didn't have a close relationship anyway. Same thing. So, yeah. Nothing's changed.
Carrie, it's interesting because you write this book on how to be a success at this, and this is something you could do. You can make money to pay off debt or to build up a nest egg and then get out. But like you said, you're worried about becoming a hypocrite because you're kind of stuck in this now. You wrote the book about doing it and getting out, but now you're having trouble yourself getting out.
Yeah, I mean, I am. I'm just now becoming realistic about how hard it is to get out. When I wrote it, I was kind of thinking all right, go and, do what I want, which was, at the time, I wanted to just go live with friends and, because my friends, I have friends in France, and they were like, if that's what you want to do, we're here for you. And then I was like, no, I'm already a hypocrite because I was like, no, I don't think I'm ready to be an immigrant, on top of all these layers of complexity. I have to keep this as simple as possible. So I was like, scratch that. So I'm already a hypocrite. And then on top of that, I'm like, all right, now I have to get out of stripping. So now I'm dealing with the next layer. And then my lease is up in a couple of months, so I'm going to move in with roommates and then, you know, find something. And there's a little less pressure to pay as much in rent. And, you know, it's just,
yeah.
It's everything takes time. It's not like it's steps. But yeah, I mean, I admit it. I am a little bit of a hypocrite for my book, but it's okay.
All right.
It happens.
Can I be your life coach for a minute here before we let you go?
Please. Yeah.
Okay.
I would love a free life coach for a minute. Yes.
Here's your 30-second life coach here from Chicago.
Okay.
So
thank you.
I feel that if you take a job and dance just a little bit, you're going to hate every job because you are going to be tired all the time. It's going to be very difficult to maintain, and you're going to be making all the money stripping, and you're going to be making very little money at whatever job you take. So
mm-hmm.
It's going to be very difficult for you to transition. You'll keep going back to the dancing because that's where the money is. So if you really want to get out, I would recommend you have about $100,000 in the bank. You're going to move in with roommates, so you'll be able to save more as you're dancing, right?
Mm-hmm.
I would set a goal for yourself. I would set deadlines that you have to stick to. Maybe it's like one more full year. And I would dance as much as you possibly could and bank as much money as you possibly can and try to get your savings to $200,000 or more. And then you have to quit cold turkey. You have to never dance again and be willing to live off of $100,000 or more of that money over the course of a year. So you can really find mm-hmm. a job full time and never, ever, ever go back to dancing again. Because I don't think you can do this a little bit at a time. It's like, I'm just going to have one or two cigarettes a day. I don't think you're ever going to quit that way, you know, because the pull is too great because the money is there. And as long as you have that out there as a possibility, all these other jobs are going to look so god awful. So make as much as you possibly can. Set a deadline for yourself that I am out of this by this date. Have the money in the bank, set yourself for deadlines every week, how much I have to make, how much I have to put away to get to my goal, and save as much as you can in the meantime with roommates. That's great. And then over the course of the next year, try as you're working every day, make sure you also don't let yourself get up at 1 o'clock, get back up at noon and set 1 hour every day that I have to look into what is out there. What is my passion in life? What do I want to do? Because you seem a little like you're not sure about that. You had ideas, but you know, you haven't loved them all. So figure out what you can do and you'll save up enough money to really give yourself a full year to find the job that you want, to get used to not having money coming in so much. You'll have to scrimp and save by living off the savings, and that'll get you into a better place of, you know, when you get a job starting out at $40,000 or $50,000 a year, that you can start living off that correctly and not have the pullback that I've got to strip because I got to make this money back.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good plan. It's not like a flip switch either. So I like that plan a lot. Yeah.
That's the best
advice. So, all right.
Okay.
That's the advice I've heard. Yep. Thank you.
All right. So we're going to check in with you in a year, make that money,
okay.
And then you'll be able to come back on the show and go, yes, I got out. I did it. This is how you do it. We'll have the sequel to the book.
Oh, my God. I hope so. Yes, I hope so. Okay. All right. Cool.
Thanks for jumping on the phone, Carrie. Good luck. I hope we talk again.
Thank you. I hope so, too.
All right. Have a great night.
Bye-bye. You too.
Okay. Matt Bubala with you here on 720 WGN. The book is Fearless, An Exotic Dancer's Guide to Personal and Professional Success. We have the news next on 720 WGN. Oh, you guys are something else with your tweets, or I'm sorry, your texts that you're sending to me. Well, happy holidays to all of you, too. We'll go over the mean texts after the news, because some of them are rather amusing. You're taking shots at me, but you're doing a very good job at it, so I appreciate the effort. We might be able to, Roger, we'll have Jess come up with some music to play underneath it. Sure, why not? This is Chicago's very own. I wanted to play a couple commercials so you could cleanse your palate before the news came in. That was interesting.
Yep.
Some of you disagree. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. If you're an Amazon Echo user, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn 3:01 in the morning. Let's get the news now with Roger. Oh, hello, everybody. Matt Bubala here with you on 720 WGN. Not everybody is in the giving spirit of the holiday season among our listening audience. 312-981-7200.
Loving their fellow man and woman. Giving of their spirit and their soul and their love and their affection.
I will edit where necessary when reading these texts.
Oh, good.
773 says, Matt, how did you manage to keep on talking to this blank? Her thoughts were all over the place. Her book should be called stupid instead of fearless. You're a brave man, Matt, trying to be her mentor. That's the nicest one.
Ouch.
262, she speaks English like the French has taken over her brain. Okay. She was going for a master's. She can't even form a coherent sentence. Where did you ever find her? 312 writes, she is so messed up on coke right now. 480, here we go. Now it gets good. 480, I'm your only listener at this point, begging you to end this or send someone over to shoot me.
That's just...
On the other hand, 480 also wrote, this is so bad, it's good. Hi, Matt, love your show, but this is the dumbest interview you have ever done. She's too wacky to even be a stripper. Another, how much has she had to drink?
Jeez.
And then, been listening to radio for 50 plus years. This might be the worst segment I've ever heard.
Well, I've heard a lot more.
That means
listening a lot longer than that. I've heard a lot worse. Trust me.
That means we've broken some records.
Thank you.
Yes.
Guinness.
Bam. Done. Take that, people. Yeah. It only goes downhill from here.
Uh-oh.
So here's the thing. Patty's had her on her show before. So mm-hmm. Patty was all excited when I told her she was going to be on and seemed to like her. And she seemed very nice. I don't know if she was sober. She might have been. She might not have been. She seemed a little all over the place.
Yeah.
But I thought the real concern was she wrote a book on being a professional success by getting in, getting out of stripping.
Mm-hmm.
And she ain't getting out of stripping.
That's right.
I mean, I don't think she's getting out. But in her defense,
mm-hmm.
I could see where that would happen. If you're not making money. And you're really struggling, and so you want to make money,
mm-hmm.
and then you start making a ridiculously excessive amount of money.
Right.
Think about like criminals, somebody who sells drugs, or somebody who does something in a criminal enterprise, and you're making all that money, but then you don't have an education or whatever to get a good job. Mm-hmm. It would be hard to make, say, $100,000 a year, and then say, okay, well, if I give that up, I'm going to go to making $30,000 or $40,000 a year. It'd be very difficult to do.
Yeah. You know, she paid off her graduate school loan.
In like 6 months from nannying. She's just become a nanny again.
She must have some very good clients.
Yeah, they must have been paying
months.
Pretty good.
My. But still.
Well, no, I guess that's not that bad. I mean, if you have no expenses, so maybe if she's a live-in nanny, you should make about $40,000 a year, right?
I've never done that before.
I never have either. But if you're in New York or somewhere pretty expensive, mm-hmm. I could see where you would make that. You're kind of probably on call 24 hours a day, more or less, living
could
in their
be.
House, taking care of their kids. So maybe that makes sense. Go back to doing that. Although it's probably hard to go back to what were you doing last? I was stripping. Oh, well, yes, please be around my children all day long.
Yeah, that's true.
So you kind of got to hide that. But there's no way she's going to hide it now. She's got a book out.
Right.
So I would imagine any employer these days kind of looks you up.
Yeah. Well, what's your resume? Oh, I just read your book last week.
I mean, there is a way to spin that, though.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not how she just did on the radio. You're not getting hired.
You know,
because
it's late at night, early in the morning. She slept through the
her
last time.
Her whole life is late at night, early in the morning right
I know,
now.
But
this is when she should be most awake.
It's the weekend. It's Thanksgiving. She's... You know, cut her some slack, people.
I'm trying, Raj. I'm trying. But you wrote the book on getting in, making your money, and getting out.
Yeah.
And now she's stuck.
If the money is good.
But she says she doesn't want to continue. Now, if she just said, you know what? I know I wrote the book about getting in, getting out, but I'm really making some coin here. So mm-hmm. I'm just sticking this out till I can't do it no more. I would respect and understand that.
Yeah.
Because she's 31. I don't know how long you have left in that profession? Maybe you can go until your 40s. I guess it all just depends on
no clue
how you're able to keep up your looks. Let's face it, that's a job where it's all probably based on your looks. She said she didn't even know how to dance. So apparently dancing isn't a huge prerequisite on this. They're not asking for ballerinas. So as long as you can keep going, if you could make $100,000 a year, I don't know. I wouldn't blame somebody.
$100,000 a year.
I wouldn't blame Roger's like, maybe I could get in shape. I wouldn't blame somebody for keeping it up. And, you know, if you got 5 or 6 good years and if you could bank, I mean, she's banking $100,000 a year. She's putting that away.
No.
That means she's making a lot.
Even when Bridget and I were both working, when she was still healthy and we were both working, we didn't even come close to that. And that's just income, not banking any of it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That was before all the bills and raising the kids and doing all that. So I only have a few things I want to ask of the world. One of them is, we'll solve all the other issues. Money.
Yeah. Money is the problem.
Yeah.
It is the cause of and root of all problems.
That's true.
Jess, what were you just trying to say to me? 35 is the max for what?
Just pulling some general articles up. It says 18 to 35 is the general age range for stripping.
Ah, so, and she's 31.
She's only got a few good years left. Make a killing at it and then go do something else.
I was being very honest with my life coaching there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I'm going to cut back to 1 or 2 days a week and try to work. That will never work out. Not with those hours. Unless you like waitresses at night too. You got to stay on those same hours. Well, I mean, you and I know I work only one night a week and you work these two nights or three nights. Three nights in a row.
Yeah. Three
shifts. How hard is it for you to go back to the next day falling back into
Monday
a normal routine? It's impossible.
Monday is my stay out of my way day. Seriously.
Because you're trying to get back on
I'm trying to get back on a regular schedule. And as it is, during school time, Monday I pick up the kids, but I don't take care of them after that. I bring them back to our place, and Bridget takes care of them, and I go in the other room and sleep.
Yeah.
And I just try to work my body back into a normal schedule. It's tough.
Yeah.
It really is tough. And that's only, I don't know if it's tougher because I'm only working 3 days, the overnight shift. I don't know if it would be less difficult if I was working the 5 nights overnight.
Well, I think if you were doing the 5 nights overnight, you wouldn't try to go back.
Right, right.
For those 2 days.
Right.
Have more of a standard routine.
Yeah.
But I can tell you, just doing this one night a week.
Mm-hmm.
It's very difficult. I mean, Friday night, I'm trying to take a nap.
Mm-hmm.
I never get enough sleep. Then you work the shift. Then you go home. You try to get some sleep. But, you know, it's Saturday.
Yeah.
So you don't want to miss that whole day. The kids are around, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So you get up, and then you're kind of crabby all day. I mean, and that's from one day a week. If I was stripping 3 nights a week, I think it would be very difficult to then. But she's young, and she's got to decide what she wants to do. If that's what you want to do, then you've got to tough it out and get through it.
Yeah.
But if I were her, also, you know, you wrote a book about it. I would be using that to my advantage in the jobs I'm applying for. You know, she can't run from it anymore now because she put a book out there.
Right.
People are going to find out that she was doing this.
Or maybe use her business acumen to maybe do a startup, to do a support company or a resource company for other entrepreneurs or other young people trying to start out after college or something like that, turn that her income, her savings, into a business. She's an expert now. She wrote a book.
Yeah.
I think that's the definition of an expert. Hey, how good are you? I'm awesome. Did you write a book? No. Well, then you're not that awesome, you know.
Well, writing a book about things can get your foot in the door. That's for sure. She could say, well, I'm an author. I wrote a book about blah, blah, blah. And I think for whatever job she applies for, she ought to use that to her advantage in some way, or try to, instead of hiding it from them, because they're going to find out about it. But you're right. She could now start a service. You know, she could work with other strippers and book them for bachelorette parties and bachelor parties and all sorts of stuff like that, maybe.
Sure.
But I don't know if she's got that in her. I mean, she really seems lost outside of this. Like, she doesn't know what the hell she wants to do.
Mm.
She
What was her master's in? Did
she was getting it, I believe, in French, because she wanted to go back to France and, like, teach, because she loved living in France.
And nothing wrong with that.
No, nothing wrong with that. But
I don't know if, you know, the educational system would appreciate a teacher by day, stripper by night.
Well, she kind of have to give that up in the end.
Yeah. You know?
And it might come back to haunt her if they're hiring and they find out, you know, what'd you do? Well, I stripped and wrote a book about it.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know if this is the right facility for you. I mean, it's...
Interesting conundrum.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be... I think we'll have to check in with her again. Despite what some of you have written, I think we'll have to check in with you again. Let's see. 815 says, I work overnight 5 days a week. Most weekends I nap and try to go back to sleeping at night for my family time, but sometimes I can't sleep at night. Right now I'm doing dishes and listening to the show because I can't sleep. Yeah. I'm enjoying the show, by the way. Thank you very much. I work overnights 5 nights in a row for 12 years, and I flip around normal on the weekends still. Hmm. If dancing isn't a required talent for stripping, stupidity must be. Love you, Matt. Come on. She's not dumb. I don't think she's dumb at all. I think she was either tired, maybe had some drinks. I don't know what.
It sounded
she did
like
not
she
seem completely coherent.
And no. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's the weekend.
Well, but she was doing an interview to promote her book.
Yeah, so?
So you should be sober for that. Even at 3 in the morning. Central.
Time.
773 says, if you're an exotic stripper, there may be times you would be high in some kind of substance. It's very difficult to do with what she's doing sober all the time, and she has family problems. She's a very smart young woman. She needs to make a decision.
Hmm.
And 664 wrote, I like the interview. Thank you. Thank you.
There you go.
You are the one we did it for. Len's on 720 WGN. Good morning, Len. How are you, sir?
Hi. I work all night, too. I work to 3 in the morning on a horse farm. So I'm driving back home to Highland Park right now.
Oh, excellent.
Listening to your show, and I got to tell you, I've been listening for, I'm 60, so I've been listening for over 50 years. That was one of the most uncomfortable interviews I've ever heard. But I'm serious. I was uncomfortable. But I also worked on a trading floor for 28 years, and I had to decipher lies. And if I could look at her while she was doing this interview, her eyes would be looking sideways, trying to think of the next thing to say because she can't keep her lies straight. And do you guys really think she wrote a book?
So you don't think she wrote the book?
Absolutely not. Somebody is making money off of her. And how can you write a book that you lied about the ending?
Well,
I mean, there, that's the big lie right there. How do you write a book? And it's not, she's not like some sharp, articulate woman that is poised and is a great interview.
Right.
And say, and now she's in the business world, and she's not that. She's still what she was. And her whole life is a big lie. And I would probably, I'm not a psychologist, but it's called borderline personality disorder, and she believes her own lies.
All right, hold on 1 second, Len. Let me not, because, if you see the book and you look through the book, you wouldn't think, oh, my God, somebody else wrote this based on her. It's not like a, it's not War and Peace. Secondly, I didn't read the entire book, Len. I don't know how she ends it, but the whole pitch is about how you get in and you do this successfully. So I assumed she was out of it. I think she should have waited until she was out of it. So that might be a little more the PR spin on here's how we're going to position and sell this book. I don't know that she ever told him, and now I'm out of it.
It's a, that was the operative word, sell. It's all a big lie. It's a big scam, and, you know, somebody, you know, obviously quoted her, but she absolutely did not. She can't articulate a sentence verbally. How could she do it in a written language? I'd love to hear her speak Francais.
Well, you know what? I'll say this, Len. Tomorrow when you get some time, look her up on YouTube because I know there's some YouTube interviews from her. Maybe she was tired. Maybe she did have a few drinks. Who knows? But give her the benefit of the doubt. Watch a YouTube video of her tomorrow, and then next week you can let me know what you think.
Yeah, well, you know what? I've had a few drinks in my life, too. I sound a hell of a lot better, man. All right, guys. Thanks.
Have a great weekend, Len. Thank you for
driving
calling.
Out there.
Oh, yikes. Poor Carrie. All right, 312-981-7200. Let's get a little caught up here. 720 WGN. Now people are asking, who was she? What was the name of the book? People that have just tuned in. Carrie Walker is the author who was on with us. Fearless, An Exotic Dancer's Guide to Personal and Professional Success is the name of the book. And, you can hear the podcast later. Tell your friends and family. They'll all just love it, love it, love it. So after the news, let's talk about Donald Trump's Person of the Year tweet. Let's talk about a tiger that got loose in Paris today.
Ooh.
And also there was I'm not hearing much about this. Maybe you've been reporting about it, Roger, but a huge terrorist attack in Egypt yesterday.
Yes, we've been reporting on it.
So terrible, yeah. Terrible news there. All right,
I've got an update coming up.
All right.
That,
so. We'll hear about that in just a minute then. 312-981-7200. If you wanted to call, jump in about just about anything, we'll take your call as well in the next half hour. Happy to hear from you here on 720 WGN. News is next. Matt Bubala with you. Oh, God, you people. You people. Matt, your first instinct was to help this girl. Please don't cheapen that. It was a noble and kind act by piling onto the negative and mean comments about a person who is clearly struggling. I also believe she is being handled by someone else who is using her to obtain money. I'm not trying to pile onto her.
No.
But I'm saying that she was not in the state of mind you would probably want to be in to promote your book. I liked her. She seemed very nice and very lost. I feel bad for her.
Mm-hmm.
And so I am not part of the piling on here. I'm reading the comments that are mostly attacking me, which is fine. I can take that. That's mm-hmm. absolutely fine. I don't blame you at all for doing
Comes
that.
Comes with the territory.
Comes with the territory. Yeah. That's okay. That's how it is. Hey, Jess, so that top texter, the 262 number, give that number a call right now because that person said they'd come on the air with us. She had texted. It was pretty interesting. Texter wrote, I didn't hear the interview, but as a dancer on my way home from work, it is possible to be intelligent and do this job and do it without using illegal substances. I'm graduating college next December with $0 in student loans.
Wow.
It's definitely not for everyone, but it can be the answer for some people.
This is not a new thing either.
That number right there.
I've been hearing about this kind of way of making ends meet. For a long, long... All right, let's go back.
Well...
All right, hold on. I'll give you context.
Okay.
Personal experience. All right? Back when I was in college, early 70s, you know that I used to have a part-time job working at Playboy.
Right.
Okay? I worked... I started in the club washing dishes, and I eventually graduated to working the front desk of the hotel.
Mm-hmm.
All right? While I was working over in the club side... And washing dishes and cleaning out locker rooms and doing all that kind of stuff, I got to be friends with quite a number of the Playmates.
Mm-hmm.
And friends in a friendly way, not in a get your mind out of the gutter way.
Well, you had your mind in the gutter at the time.
No.
There's no doubt about it.
No.
Come on, you can't be friends.
No.
You were single at the time?
I was in college.
Oh, come on, Raj.
No, seriously.
I'm sure you were being their friend, but I'm sure you were thinking of one of them hits
no.
on me.
No. No.
All right, Mr. Squeaky.
First of all, the majority of them were at least 6 to 10 years older than me.
Mm-hmm.
And the majority of them were raising children.
Of the
And this was the way that they were making money. They were Playboy bunnies. And this was a way to make money
sure.
to help support their children and their family. Some of them were married. Some of them weren't. They were intelligent. They were sharp. And they were nice people.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
And they look good in the tail.
Get
well,
your
they
mind.
You're talking about when you worked at the Playboy Club. Where's my mind going to go?
Do you know that when they wore regular clothes
I'm sure they look
very
normal.
You wouldn't have turned their head. You wouldn't have turned your head to look at them at all.
Really?
Have you ever seen a Playboy bunny costume? Have you ever seen it?
Yes.
Are you sure?
Well, not in person. I've seen it in pictures.
Okay. You know what it's mainly made of?
Well, it looks like a swimsuit, but I don't know what it's made of. It looked like hard.
It's extremely hard. It's the inside part of it has metal stays in it
so
throughout the entire costume. So that does two things. One, the costume stays in that exact shape no matter what the bunny does.
Mm-hmm.
Two, it helps accentuate the girl's personal assets.
312-981-7200. Jasmine is the person who texted in, and she's driving home from her job as a dancer. Hey, Jasmine, how are you?
I'm pretty good.
Thank you very much for texting and calling in. So you missed the interview, but there's a girl out has a book out called Fearless. What is it here? Fearless, an exotic dancer's guide to personal and professional success by Carrie Walker. And it's about, she graduated from college, wanted to travel more, was having trouble finding a good paying job. So she thought, get out of this debt and I'm going to be an exotic dancer for a while. And she did. And she wrote a book about it, but she's still dancing. She's 3 years in. And on the interview we did, she sounded a little, a little lost in life, and that she wants to get out of dancing, but now she's kind of stuck in it because she can't find a job that she likes. She doesn't seem to know what she wants to do with her life. And here she is making an insane amount of money dancing. So she keeps doing it. And Jasmine, you texted that you are paying your way through college or paying off your college debt as you go to school by doing the same thing, sort of.
Yeah.
And
I actually attempted college a couple times, but you said I couldn't find a job paying enough, so I'm actually a pre-law student now because I'll be able to make enough money after law school to equal what I make now.
How crazy is that? So you're not in law school yet, or you are in law school now?
Next year.
Next year you start. Will you have to keep dancing while you're in law school to pay your way through that?
Probably.
And how difficult is it? Do your family, do your friends know that you're dancing?
They do. My friends are supportive. My family, not so much.
Yeah, I'm sure. I can't imagine that. That's got to be tough. But it's getting you through school. Do you think you'll have no trouble getting out of it when the time is right?
I've actually been dancing for like 15 years.
Oh, my gosh.
And I'm ready to be done.
So are you early 30s then? Early to mid 30s?
Yeah.
Jess was just reading earlier that the average strippers are between 18 and 35 years old. Are you kind of like getting to the point where you're like, I've got to get out of this because time is just moving on and this is a younger girl's game?
Yeah. I go to work and I'm like, I could be your mother for some of the girls at work, so.
And what kind of things do you see within the profession? I mean, Carrie wrote this book about, she talked a lot about avoiding a lot of the pitfalls because it's very easy to drink. I'm sure guys want to buy you drinks all night long. I'm sure it'd be very easy to get into drug use. And she said she saw a lot of girls really fall into that. And also just making that much money, it's probably very easy to spend the money. So how do you avoid all of that while you're doing this?
I have a parent that has addiction issues. It was easier for me to say that's not something I'm willing to do. I make enough money that I could have done it. But I was very concerned about being one of those girls that went to work to feed their addiction.
Yeah.
So I've never tried any drugs other than weed ever.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I was so concerned about falling into that addiction.
Yeah.
But I see the girls that do it and I understand how easy it is to fall into it. And I probably drink a little too much while I'm at work, but I have a hard limit now. I've learned, I have to cut myself off.
Yeah. I imagine it's very hard not to drink while you're doing that job, though. Everybody there is drinking, and you got to get through this night. Is it as difficult as it would seem? I mean, how are the clients, especially his, all we talk about these days right now with what's going on in our culture is all the harassment issues that have come to light. Is it very difficult in that job too, or is it in some ways easier because guys are there, they're paying money, and there's a little more of an understanding of why everybody's there?
I mean, there's definitely the understanding why everybody's there, but I also have the unique position. Like, I always think of my job as a customer service job, but I can walk away.
Mm-hmm.
Guy, be jerk, I can just walk away and say, I'm not dealing with you tonight.
Mm-hmm.
I have that line where, sure, I need to make money, but I'm not willing to put up with whatever they're trying to do for that money.
So as somebody who's been doing it for 15 years, are you able to bank a lot of money doing it? You said you're going to graduate from college. I'm guessing you went away from college and now you're going back as you're seeing the end of the line coming. Is that how that worked out?
Yeah. I stopped dancing for a while and I got married and then it didn't work out. And I found myself with a bunch of kids to support and I knew that I needed a career. But I also needed to be able to pay the rest of the bills while I worked on getting to that career.
Sure.
So I work 3 days a week. I make like $1,000 a week and I pay student loans and I pay all the bills for my kids. And I'm still able to do the, you know, take the kids to school, go on field trips, type thing. So it's kind of ideal.
How many kids do you have?
I have 5.
Oh my goodness, Jasmine. So you got a lot to take care of. And I imagine they're young enough. They have no idea what mom's doing for work.
As far as my kids are concerned, I'm a bartender.
Okay, well, that makes sense.
The club that I work at is actually attached to a sports bar, so I just tell them I work at the bar next door.
Is it far enough away that you're not running into people you would know through school or ever seeing anybody?
I drive 55 minutes to work for that. And there's one club closer to where I live, so pretty much everybody goes there. So, yeah, I take the extra commute. I'm not running into people that they will know.
Yeah, I would imagine. Has that ever happened in the 15 years where you're at the club one night and you're like, oh, crap, there's Joe?
I mean, it has happened, but people who know me well enough know that I work there. So it's kind of a, oh, so you came because you were curious type thing.
Yeah. Is that weird, though, when somebody you know, especially if it's like the husband of a friend of yours, shows up there? You're like, all right, your wife, how do you handle that?
Those are definitely the nights where I forget my alcohol limit.
I can understand. Well, Jasmine, thank you so much for calling in. I appreciate it. Good luck to you. I hope that, you know, you get through law school and get a good job as you come out of it. Do you know what kind of law you're hoping to work in?
I'm looking at like divorce and family law.
Yeah. Good for you. Good for you. Well, I hope you have a great holiday with all those kids.
I will.
All right, Jasmine.
Thank you for always being entertaining. I listen to you guys every night on my way home. Well,
we appreciate that very much. Keep tuning us in and call in again. There's Jasmine. So, there, you know what? I imagine this, and I should have asked Jasmine because I didn't ask Carrie, but I do wonder if there's a seasonality somewhat to the job, too. I bet Jasmine maybe picks up an extra shift this time of year whenever she can to make a little extra money because you have the holidays coming up. I bet that is common, that if you can get the extra work that you do. All right, 312-981-7200. Mampu Bala with you, 720 WGN. So, there. We brought it all back around. By the way, Raj, I'm not the only one taking heat on the texts.
I got some.
630. Roger seems to have plenty of knowledge about how a Playboy Bunny outfit works, yet he claims no interest in those ladies. Okay, I get it. Bridget must be listening.
I didn't even know Bridget when I was there, and she's not listening. She doesn't listen to me.
That's a marriage right there.
She's sleeping right now.
I know. They're just teasing you, Roger. Right. Very defensive about this.
I'm not defensive at all.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. 815 says, I know a woman that made $300K a year dancing at Heavenly Bodies during the day shift, most of which was cash. She took good care of herself, did not use drugs, danced into her early 40s. She is well invested and set for life.
That's pretty good money. Hey.
That is really good money. Can you imagine $300K a year? I would strip for $300K a year.
I don't know if you would get $300K a year.
Well, maybe not me. I'd work out a little more if it was that important.
I was just talking. This actually happened. This actually happened. We were living in Vegas. Okay. Bridget and I married. And I believe our daughter had been born by then. We were still living in Vegas. And there were some concerns about our income. And I was working in radio, and she was a nurse. Mm-hmm. No, actually, she wasn't a nurse, but she was working in a hospital. She didn't become a nurse until after we got back to Chicago. She was working in a hospital and billing department and stuff like that, and not making more than me. And we were having a discussion about our income. And this is the truth, hand to God, as I've heard people say. I said, honey, if things don't work out, I'll go sell myself on the street.
You said this.
I said that. And okay. She said, for sure we'll go broke. I just said that out in the hallway. I just recounted that out in the hallway to Bob.
That's funny.
And so you ain't stripping anywhere, even if you do work out, buddy. Nah, first of all, you're past the early 40s. Aren't you?
I'm aging gracefully, Raj. By the way, don't forget it was a big headline this past year that the dad bod was what was the in body. So, hello.
The dad bod?
The dad bod, you know, not quite in shape.
Yeah?
That's called the dad bod.
How can we make money off of this?
I don't know. Maybe stripping, although it seems odd.
Yes, extremely.
Just says we could be like Magic Mike. We could go out and we could dance.
There's nothing magic about it.
Yeah, those guys were in really good shape, Jess. That's not
really.
I don't think that's going to work out. Maybe we get those T-shirts with the spray painted on abs.
Oh yeah, make it look like we're
solve our problems.
And then we're like cinching straps underneath to hold our guts in.
We'll just saran wrap our whole body.
There
shut.
You go. That works. And then people say take it off and it'll be an hour by the time we get done unwrapping this.
We're gonna unwrap it one layer at a time, ladies. Oh God help us. 312-981-7200. News coming up, 720 WGN. Well, Raj, I'm not sure which it is. Either my mom or one of our wives is up because this text just came in. Grow up, you both sound ridiculous. I'm not sure.
I'm never going to grow up.
But I'm going to sound ridiculous.
No, I don't want to grow up.
Because, baby, if I did, I wouldn't be a Toys R Us kid. More games, more toys. Oh, boy. I could do that whole thing. Don't worry. Do you struggle getting deep, restful sleep? Think about it. When was the last time you replaced your pillow? Your tossing and turning may be a result of that flat, worn-out pillow that you've been sleeping on for years. So, try MyPillow and join the millions of people who are getting the best sleep of their lives. You can try one out absolutely risk-free. Go to MyPillow.com or call 800-299-9579. MyPillow is offering their signature 4-pack special at 50% off. Just use promo code WGN at checkout. They'll even throw in free shipping. And on top of a 10-year warranty, MyPillow is so confident you'll love your new pillow, they'll give you a 60-night money-back guarantee. So sleep on it. If you don't believe it's the best pillow out there, return it for a full refund. Try MyPillow. See why customers have described them as life-changing. Call 800-299-9579 or log on to MyPillow.com and use promo code WGN. After the news, I want to talk about something I saw on Facebook tonight. Somebody is starting a Chicago-based private flight. So if you're a business traveler, you got a flight in New York all the time. Instead of having to book on, you know, an airline and go through all the hassle, private flights. Invest, get flights through that, fly in private airplanes. Is air flight enough of a hassle to go through something like that? I want to talk about what they're offering and see what kind of interest you would have and how frustrated you are with flying these days. First, it's time for this. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNradio.com. If you're an Amazon Echo user, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. News now at 401. Here's Roger Badish. Morning, everybody. Matt Babala with you here, 720 WGN. Funny thing is, you guys texted so much about how you hated that interview, and you're all mad at me, and oh, why am I doing this? And Roger and I sound ridiculous. Yet I keep getting, wait, what was the interview? What was the name of the book? Carrie Walker was the author that we talked to, Fearless, an Exotic Dancer's Guide to Personal and Professional Success. She's a very sweet girl, a little lost right now, trying to figure out what to do with life, I think. And, you know, Roger, I was thinking, too. So she was saying that she's had these jobs doing editing, and she likes doing editing. That is, God, what a what a tough profession to get into right now. I mean, think about where are all of the editing jobs. In the old days.
We're talking book editing or film
I don't know,
editing?
Any editing.
Oh, okay, okay.
Copywriting editing, whatever right, editing. Yeah. I would think that a majority or a lot of jobs used to be in newspapers.
Yeah.
And they are letting editors. Think about how often you read the paper now and find errors. Or you read stories online and find errors. I mean, it is amazing to me how often I'll read a story and find an error.
Yeah.
And I used to, like, if I used to find an error in the Tribune, say, 10 years ago, I'd be like, oh, my God, I just caught an error. Mm-hmm. And you'd get sort of excited for a second, like, can you believe that? I just found out that they made an error.
Yeah.
Now, it's very common, because I think they've just jettisoned so many of those jobs.
Yeah, well, probably, yes. But still, they've gotten rid of it, I think, all those jobs, because the computers now are supposed to.
But they don't catch.
They can't catch all the, everything.
You know, because there's some things that aren't errors,
yeah.
You know, except in context, and the computers can't do that yet.
Yeah, it's a lost art. It's a lost profession, but they still have book editors.
They do. Yeah, there's still editing jobs.
And most of them are freelance.
That's the thing, and I was going to bring that up. So there's somebody we've hired at Black Dog who does editing and writing of video scripts and things like that for us. And she had a full-time job previously that she left, and now she's doing it all freelance. She works for us. She works for a bunch of people, and she's making more money than she ever has. But it's really, a symbol of today's society that you have to be very aggressive in some jobs. There aren't a lot of jobs that or as many jobs that you go work for a corporation and you can work for the next 40 years and then retire. You have to be so willing to adapt. You have to be so willing to change jobs. And for something like editing, you're probably going to have to, if you really want to make it, possibly be freelance.
Yeah.
And then you've got to be aggressive about going after those jobs. They don't necessarily all just come to you.
Of course, if you're working for, say, a book publisher or a national publication or something where there's steady work and you get your foot in the door and you're good at it, you're going to get the calls. You're not going to have to chase the work down.
Maybe. I mean, you know, if you're working for, but I'm sure that there are editors that were let go by the Chicago Tribune who are great editors for the Chicago Tribune that aren't necessarily getting their doors knocked down.
Yeah, that's true.
Because there's just not enough of a need.
They're used to newspaper work, and as we know, newspapers are fewer and far between and cutting back.
And they're getting by with less.
Yeah.
That's for sure. Also, can I just say, so I have a friend who is a Chicago police officer, and he revealed to me over the weekend what he's making a year.
Oops.
Oh, my God. Now, listen, awful job. Not necessarily an awful job, but a very tough job.
A dangerous job, a stressful job.
Some of the neighborhoods, all the stuff you see, what you got to go through, the stress of being on the job, the fear, the danger, all of those things. But one of my last stories for DNA, God rest its soul, DNAinfo.com, was about that the CPD was hiring new people, and you start out at 50, and within 2 years, you're making $72,000 a year. I have a friend who's on the force. He's making $120,000 a year.
But he's been on the force a long time.
He's been on the force for a long time. He's gone up. He made it to sergeant.
Okay.
Okay. Right. So you've
Which
worked
means
his way up.
You got to go back to school. You got to take the test.
Well, you got to take the test.
Right.
It's not like he went
You
got to study.
Sign up for the courses.
Yeah. Sure. But, and so, yes, might get shot. That's a danger. All sorts of issues. Yes. But making $120,000 a year. Yeah. And when retired, so after 30 years, I think at the age of 52, because he started out so young, he could retire and take his full pension, which means that he would get 80% of his salary.
Of the last 4 years.
And if he makes...
If it's like the teacher's
pension. I think it is. And if he makes it to lieutenant by then, which he probably will, so say he's making even more.
Right.
He's going to get like $80,000 or $90,000 mm-hmm. a year mm-hmm. for the rest of his life. Think about that.
And deservedly so.
Something.
In my opinion.
Sure.
In my opinion.
But you could see where cities would go, we can't afford to do that. Now, I'm all for it. And
well, then
being,
what are you going to do for crime prevention? Who's going to patrol your streets?
You think the people, if they said, well, you're not going to get $80,000 for the rest of your life, would say, I'm not doing that job?
Yeah.
I think people still need the jobs.
Well, yeah, but not a job where your life is in danger every day. Not a job. This is not Andy of Mayberry.
No,
this
it's not.
Chicago.
It is Chicago.
Illinois. And it is. And
but you, while he's doing the job, he's making $120,000 a year. What does the average American make? It's under $50,000, mm-hmm. right?
But so the average American does not have a gun strapped to their hip.
True.
And is not patrolling in at night down parts of a major metropolitan city where other people have guns and are firing them at
true,
him.
True, 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 true. And that is why they're making $120,000
exactly.
a year.
And I used to say that, and I actually had a bunch of parents say that they wouldn't have my job as a teacher for all the money in the world after they had spent a couple of days no
right.
seriously in the
it.
School and some of them were parents of students in that school, but I would take a day salary and pay it to someone who would complain about how much money they're paying teachers or how much teachers are getting when they retire. And I would tell them, you go ahead and you teach. And here's what you got to do. You can't just stand in front of the classroom and say, all right, everybody sit down, shut up, and here's a worksheet. No, that's not what we do. I want you to make sure you have your lesson plans for the day. I want to see your tests and quizzes. I want to see your entrance work that you're going to require and your exit work you're going to require of the students in your class. I want to see what grading criteria you're going to use, and I want to see what the lesson plans are as they have been altered for all the students in your classroom, not just the smart ones. And this is what people don't understand, at least those who criticize how much money our public servants get. Teachers are public servants, police, fire, city workers are public servants. We're doing those jobs to educate your children and to keep you safe and to make sure your water is running and to make sure your streets are cleared. And that is why, because we don't pay Social Security, because we're public servants, that is why we get pensions. I'm off my high horse.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
And I understand all of that. However, and I will never complain about how much a teacher makes or police officer or firefighter, because they are putting their firefighters and police are putting their lives at risk. Teachers are not putting their lives at risk, hopefully, most days, but they are. Yes,
in doing some parts of the city and in other parts of the country,
sure,
they are.
However, I will say that the pension part is very difficult. When
yes.
that was all set up, you weren't living to about 100 or up to 100
true.
Years of age. And now we are. And now it's a Ponzi scheme that we can't keep going.
No.
Because you guys were paying in too, and now there's...
We're
when
still
you were,
paying into.
You are, but people
yeah.
keep retiring every year and then keep living. So if my friend retires at 52 and then for 40 years, say, mm-hmm. collects that $80,000 a year, that's not like, oh, they didn't put into Social Security, so they get this. That's $80,000 plus increases. It's going to keep going up. It's an insane amount of money. It's great. Now, I love the pension system. I really want Colleen to go back to teaching full time and earn into the pension so she can collect from what she put into for 10 years. But that's not going to happen. But I think there's a future, Raj, where none of these servants will have the public servants eventually will have the pension system like they have it now.
And I agree.
It's going to move to 401k, and hopefully they'll work out good contracts where the city puts a lot of money into that 401k for them, and they invest in the 401k, and they get back into Social Security and all of those things. But you just know when you think about people retiring and making that amount of money over that amount of time, it'd be cheaper for the cities to pay them more upfront to do the jobs. Because when you think about $80,000 a year for 40 years.
You mean to pay them a higher salary? And
yeah,
say,
so he's making $120,000 now. They'd be better off offering $130,000.
The employee then is responsible for taking that money or a amount of money.
Right, putting it in their 401k.
Putting it in a savings plan. And, you know, they're moving the teachers to that in the state. They've already started that quite a number of years ago. They started to where it's either 2020 or it's fairly soon that when you start teaching now in Chicago, I believe the state of Illinois also, two separate contracts. Chicago is separate from the rest of the state of Illinois. That's what's going to happen. There is no more pension for those new employees. You have to take your start your own savings plan.
That's teachers being hired now?
I'm not sure if it's right now or if it might be in another couple of years that starts. Because you kind of have to start phasing out. It's a three-tiered thing. It's like teachers like me who were in it for a long time and started before a certain year. Then there's that group in between, and then there's the current group. And it's slowly phased out.
Yeah.
And because you can't just cut it off in one spot, you still got a bunch of people teaching who were under the old system. So they had to slowly kind of come up with arbitrary dates to slowly phase it out. But they're still not paying or eligible for Social Security, which is a whole nother, problem right there.
Well, I know it's interesting also. I was just reading a story about, I don't know if it was in the Trib. Or if it was online or in a magazine, but about the issues in Wisconsin because they're gutting the unions, especially for teachers. And so teachers think, okay, do I stay and do I fight for a better Wisconsin or do I move to Minnesota and take a job there?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's going to be something that everybody deals with.
And here's the other problem. There are some states can't find teachers. There's not enough teachers.
Well, didn't we just do the story last week? Is it Oklahoma? I think it
was a state down, not Texas, not maybe
somewhere
Oklahoma.
Down there, yeah, Oklahoma, yeah, yeah. Texas,
South Central United States.
The teacher who got busted on a sting operation, the cops showed up at her house because she was having one of her students, come over to fool around, and she had texted, "Hurry up before my husband gets home." Her husband was the football coach at the school. And she was hired as part of an effort to hire uncredited or, unlicensed teachers to fill these roles that they don't have filled because.
Well, there are a lot of programs, and there's been several in Chicago and the state for, I would say, over 20 years now, where they will allow you to teach in the school systems without the formal school training in college with the degree and then taking the state test for teachers, which is a 2-day test. And there are alternate methods of getting certified. And I'm not going to do air quotes because it's radio. But there are ones where if you agree to teach for 5 years in an inner city school, boom, you're certified. So that means if you can make it for 5 years and you keep your nose clean, you get certified. But there's no checking to see who you are or what you are. Now, I will say that there are some protective guidelines in place. One, you have to be fingerprinted in the state of Illinois to be a teacher. You have to go through a background check in the state of Illinois to be a teacher. That doesn't necessarily catch everything. And I think for the last 20, 30, 40 years, there have been ample proof that not everyone who becomes a teacher should be in the classroom.
Well, like with any job, you know.
Well, true, but it's more evident there because you're dealing with.
Well, and I think also in this day and age, we hear more about it.
Right.
Anytime a female teacher is fooling around with a boy, we hear about it.
Yeah.
And
see, or vice versa.
I feel like we hear about it more and it's more news when it's a woman doing it.
Yeah.
Guys have been pigs their whole lives. We hear that in the news every day. Women doing that with underage boys is more of a dog bites man,
yeah,
you know, situation. Let's take a quick break. Then I want to jump to this Air Chicago thing real quick and see what you think about this. Is this a good deal or not? That's next. 720 WGN. So I've got this in my Facebook, a little post, a suggested post. So it's a sponsored thing. It's called Air Chicago. Air Chicago is an affordable luxury alternative to commercial airlines like Delta and United. We offer flights to and from business aviation airports all over the U.S. Our nonstop flights depart in the morning and return in the evening on time. We have a limited time offer to invest in our founder card. This is a one-time investment that is good for the rest of your life. For every $1,000 you invest, you will receive 4 complimentary flights on Air Chicago annually for the rest of your life. You'll also receive ownership in the company and average airline coach fares for all additional flights. Visit our founder card website for more information or send us a message here. So I went to their website, flyairchicago.com. So they fly out of the executive airport, Raj. Where is that at?
Executive airport?
Yeah.
Well, Meg's is gone.
No. It's north
at
of
O'Hare?
O'Hare. It's north of O'Hare. Is that
Palwaukee?
Is it Palwaukee? I think it is Palwaukee, right?
I didn't know if they had changed the name. I always know it as Palwaukee. I haven't been by there.
I think they call
ages.
It Chicago Executive Airport.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure. So they're offering, so this is interesting because if you buy a card, let's see what the pricing is. A Premier Jet card is $7,000 a month.
Wow.
So that's unlimited flights.
I need a second job.
To where they're going. But there's a limited quantity Founder Jet card, which gets you 4 flights a year for every $1,000 you invest, and you're investing in the actual company.
The company?
In Air Chicago. It's called Air Chicago. All right. They're flying Challenger 850 jets, which are, they said, 50 seat. It's a Bombardier plane. It's
wow.
A 50 seat jet that they change into a first class 14 seat jet.
Oh, okay.
So there's only 14 seats on it. So it's luxurious. The pictures are luxurious.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it looks nice. Mm. And they fly to executive airports, and they're going to launch, and I don't think that they've launched as of yet.
They fly to executive airports. Is that every major city?
When they launch, First City Group routes will open in 2018. Flights depart from Chicago Executive Airport and fly into private business aviation airports near your destination. So the first group that they're going to open up is New York, LA, DC, Miami, and San Francisco. So that's where they're starting with. Eventually, they want to get to 30 cities. So it'll be Atlanta. Next group's supposed to be Atlanta, Boston, Charlotte, Cleveland, and Ohio, Columbus. Dallas, Denver, Detroit, Hartford, Houston. Actually, they're just doing this alphabetical order, so I don't know when they're doing all these. Kansas City, Vegas, Minneapolis, Nashville, Orlando, Philly, Pittsburgh, Phoenix, Portland, Providence, Raleigh, Durham, San Diego, St. Louis, Seattle, and Tampa. Eventually, that's what they plan to have. They're starting with New York, LA, DC, Miami, and San Francisco. And so you fly there in the morning, you can fly back at night, or probably whenever they fly. But for $1,000, you can fly 4 round trips a year. Now, what do you think? If you got $1,000 and you travel, do you say, I'll throw that in, or do you say, that's giving it away because there's no way this company is going to make it?
Well, I'm thinking if you've got that kind of money and have that kind of need to fly and you don't want to do it on commercial airlines,
might as well give it a shot.
Well, either that or go buy your own jet. Go buy your own plane and either hire an experienced pilot or go get your own license.
Well, that's a lot of money.
Well, I know, but Air Orion.
Yeah.
You know, he flies all over the place.
He does. Not on this plane, though.
Well, no. I mean, we're not talking that kind of a luxury jetliner.
Luxury jetliner, my friend.
Yeah.
All right, quick break, and then let's talk about the Trump administration and whether or not they're going to end up lifting this ban on bringing back elephant heads and other elephant trophies from overseas trips. We'll talk with somebody who can tell us about how that affects conservation efforts and tourism and things like that after the news, which is next on 720 WGN. Matt Bobala with you here for another 20 minutes on 720 WGN. Adam Roberts has spent the last quarter century working for animal protection and wildlife conservation around the world. He joins us on the phone right now to talk about what's going on with the Trump administration and the yes or no decision they're trying to make about whether or not to lift the trophy ban on bringing elephant parts back to the United States. Good morning, Adam. How are you?
Good morning. Thanks for having me. I'm good.
Thanks for jumping on the phone. When it was first announced that they were going to lift it before the backlash and before President Trump decided to hold back for a minute, what was your first reaction? Were you not surprised that they were lifting that restriction, or were you taken by surprise?
No, I have to say I was taken by surprise for a variety of reasons. Now, the most important one is the ongoing conservation peril that the African elephant finds itself in, being poached all across Africa for its ivory. Surely this isn't the time to be reopening any trade into the United States of elephant ivory. But then the second part that I found so surprising was that they specifically recognized Zimbabwe as one of the two countries that they were considering letting elephant trophies come in from, because Zimbabwe, of course, is practically lawless and up until the past week had been run by a ruthless dictator in his own right, Robert Mugabe. And so if you're going to pick any country, Zimbabwe was certainly not the one to do it. So it was really mystifying to me why at this time, from that place, the administration was considering letting trophy huntings come into the country.
There's an argument on the other side that allowing the hunting helps conservation efforts. Is that true in any way?
Yeah, it's not true, it's not proven, and it's in its own right a mystifying argument. I've been thinking lately about all of this debate in Washington about tax reform and how we're trying to give corporate tax cuts in the hopes that corporations would then have more money and that money would be used to raise wages and hire more employees, this concept of trickle-down economics. Well, it seems to me that that's the same fallacy at work here, where we hope that because trophy hunters pay for the privilege of these thrill kills in Africa, that somehow the money is going to make it to conservation. The fact of the matter is, most of these hunting corporations, these hunting outfitters that do the safaris, are foreign-owned. They're in Germany, they're in the United States. So the bulk of the money isn't even making it into the country where the animals exist. And then what money does make it into the country, pay for the hunt, for the vehicles, for the tents, for the safari itself. So very little money, about 2% on average, is actually making it down to the local communities. And then, of course, any money that does make it to the local communities is not necessarily going to conservation. So it's really not a very strong argument that just because it costs money to pay for safari hunts, the money is necessarily being used for conservation.
My guess is the argument would be that if you're allowing them to hunt, the money is there, hunters want to go do this, that means it's in the best interests of the locals who are going to be able to take people on tours and do things like that to make sure that there are elephants, that there are these animals. So they want to make sure that they're breeding them, saving them, doing all those things because it's a sustaining tourism that helps bring money in. That the government would want to do this because they want this tourism dollars coming in. That if we don't allow the tourists to go in to hunt, then that money is not there to help the local economy. And then there's no reason for them to help save these elephants or other animals which may need saving. Is there any strength to that argument?
No, again, it sounds good, but the fact of the matter is there's much more money to be made by ecotourism, not hunting tourism, consumptive tourism, than there is by killing animals. In fact, studies have shown that more than 98% of all tourism revenue across the entire African continent comes from wildlife tourism that's not hunting-based. So if we really care about investing in these local economies around the continent, we're going to want to do it in a sustainable way, and that's through ecotourism, not safari hunting. But more importantly, you have to think about, especially in this case, the situation with elephants. You know, African elephants are incredibly long-lived species, right? They live in the wild to be 50, 60, 70 years old. And so if you really want to think about sustainable tourism models that are going to to bring money into local economies year after year. You want to keep those animals alive, with people like us going to watch them in the wild, where you have these magical, majestical, matriarchal herds of elephants with grandmothers and daughters, granddaughters, all wandering the savannah together. That's really where the money is, and that's how local economies are going to benefit the most. But then even if you set all of that aside, and even if you accepted that, you know, there was some government impetus to keep these animals safe because the hunting revenue supports the economies, you have to remember, too, that, you know, in some of these countries like Tanzania or Zimbabwe, you've got incredibly corrupt governments that aren't protecting the wildlife. And in fact, in places where hunting has been allowed in those countries, poaching has escalated, whereas other countries like Botswana have actually closed down their trophy hunting industries because they wanted to protect the wildlife from this unsustainable killing. So it really overall is not a good idea economically or from a conservation basis to allow hunting, especially in a country like Zimbabwe.
So Ryan Zinke, the Interior Secretary, said in a statement later Friday night that the decision applied to two African countries, though it did not name them. President Trump and I have talked and both believe that conservation and healthy herds are critical. As a result, in a manner compliant with all applicable laws, rules, and regulations, the issuing of permits is being put on hold as the decision is being removed. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service had signaled its intention to end the 2014 ban, citing Zimbabwe's conservation efforts. On Thursday, the service announced on its website that it would begin issuing permits to allow the import of elephants hunted from 2016 to 2018, with two trophies allowed per import. From 2016 to 2018, so are there people that are there hunting and killing things and then having people hold on to, say, the head that as soon as I can, I'm going to have this sent over? Are there hunts that already took place that people are holding on to pieces from?
Yeah, that must be the case. And I think the 2018 part is especially troubling. You know, the United States Congress has considered stuff like this in the past, where they've looked at legislation on polar bear trophies to allow people who had killed polar bears in places like Canada before it was banned in the United States to bring those trophies back in, to allow those animals' trophies to come in because they had already been killed. It looks like they're trying to use that same model. But the problem, especially with the 2018 part, is that this is sort of prospecting, where you can imagine there's going to be a flood of hunters trying to get down and kill these animals in those countries next year in order to take advantage of this potential rule change. So I think that's particularly troubling and definitely would put additional pressure on the nation's elephant population. But again, the rules, the way they've been coming out and the decisions from this administration are really confusing, and one never has a real clear idea of which countries are definitely involved and whether it's happening or not happening. And then, of course, whether there's going to be a backlash either in the courts or in Congress to try and prevent it from going through.
When did President Obama put the ban in place?
So there were a number of rules under the previous administration to protect wild animals and across Africa, but this one came in place in 2014, and that's actually another part of this that's potentially confusing and mystifying and really quite infuriating, is that the Secretary of the Interior and others seem to rely on this concept that there is somehow stability in Zimbabwe, both in terms of government regulation and oversight over hunting and also of elephant populations. But the fact of the matter is, as I mentioned before, elephants are so long-lived, and you're looking at a trajectory of wildlife declines over the past 30, 40 years, that it's simply not going to be rectified or stabilized in simply 2 or 3 years in such a way that we could determine conclusively and scientifically that now is the time to reopen hunting from Zimbabwe. I think if you're looking at something that's happened over the past 2 or 3 years, you're going to need probably 10 or 20 years to study the population and country before you determine that there can be additional pressure put on that population.
Do you feel, not to get too political here, but do you feel that this was just that President Obama put this in place, I'm dismantling whatever I can that Obama did, so here's another thing we're going to do away with?
Well, being someone who reads the papers and watches the news, I could say that's surely part of it. I mean, that wouldn't be folly to consider that that's it. But then also, you know, you look at the president's sons, who both seem to enjoy trophy hunting and have plenty of pictures posted online of them with their kills, including killing elephants previously. So it might be, you know, self-serving in terms of his ego and his relationship with the former president, but also his family. But he has said, Donald Trump, in the past, that while his sons enjoy hunting, he doesn't. The third part, in addition to those two reasons, is that it could just be pressure from Safari Club International through the Department of Interior, seeing an opportunity to start hunting again under this administration.
Were you surprised then when he pulled back on it? Because generally, to me, love him or hate him, President Trump is not one who caves too much. In my mind, that's more where he'll dig his heels in. Like, if you fight back on him, that's when he's going to put up more of a stand to say, no, this is my decision, this is what we're going to do. So I was very surprised when he pulled back on it, at least for the time being.
Yeah, surprised obviously is an interesting word with this administration, but on the one hand, one could say surprised, because when this president decides something's happening for whatever reason, he becomes entrenched and is willing to double and triple down on his decision. On the other hand, he also very much cares about public perception, and so when you've got conservative thought leaders like Laura Ingraham even coming out online and saying, you know, this is a ridiculous decision, and you've got so many comments in social media talking about how poor this was thought through, that may have played into his thinking that there was really a public backlash, and he obviously wants people to love his decision. So that could have played a part in it as well.
So what do you think happens long term? And what, say this hunting ban stays in place, is enough being done in those countries to save these elephants, or is it going to be at a critical point no matter what? Because whether or not Americans can hunt there, people from other countries can. Americans can still come hunt there, they just can't take their trophies home right now. So is enough being done that these elephants are going to be saved?
Yeah, so on the ground in places like Zimbabwe, again, you know, it's very hard to know for sure, because the government corruption is so rampant and there's so much government instability. So that's why, again, I think we need to do everything we can to prevent American citizens from adding to the hunting pressure or the pressure that the species is facing in the country. You know, that's something that's uniquely within our purview, that we can actually make a difference by making sure that Americans are not contributing to the demise of the species in the wild. But then overall, you know, if you look at sort of the way the pendulum has swung over the past 30 years, you see that in the 1970s and 1980s, there was an onslaught of poaching of elephants all across Africa, and the population declined from about 1.3 million to 600,000. It was fully cut in half because of all of that pressure. And then when the global ban on ivory trade was put in place, populations were at least able to stabilize a bit, and poaching declined. But then over the years, that ivory ban was weakened, and you kept having this sort of drip-drip where some countries, including Zimbabwe, were allowed to trade in ivory. Countries were trading in hunting trophies. So the poaching pressure started up again. I think the best thing we can do is say unequivocally that until there is conclusive evidence that populations of African elephants are increasing continent-wide, we're not going to do anything to put extra pressure on the population. That's the best thing we can do.
And how do you know about how low the population is right now? You said it had gotten down to 600,000 from 1.2 million. Do we know about what it's at right now?
Yeah, various estimates are out there, but the most recent one pegged it at around 400,000, maybe even a little less. So you can see that there's this extra poaching pressure. And again, it's because in 1997, the ivory ban started to get weakened. And even as much as a couple of years ago, as recently as a couple of years ago, you had situations coming out of Zimbabwe where hundreds of elephants were being poisoned with cyanide, which is, of course, incredibly grotesque and brutal, so that they can get their ivory. So, you know, that poaching pressure is on again, and that's why it's the wrong time to start adding to the pressure.
Now, I would guess that some people would say, well, 400,000, that's plenty of elephants. Why are we so concerned about this?
Yeah, so, you know, that's a really interesting point. It's a good one if you're only looking at numbers, right? But you're looking at, number one, a species that we know has an incredibly huge range across all of Africa, continent-wide, so it's not a very small range. And then secondly, you know, it's not just about the numbers. It's about the impact on the ecosystem. Elephants are incredibly vital to the ecosystem in which they thrive. And also there are some countries where elephants are literally being wiped out. So in Central Africa, populations are declining significantly. In West Africa, there are some countries where they're all but gone. So they're significantly concentrated in Southern Africa. And what we see in the trajectory of poaching and consumption of ivory is that as poaching pressure destroys populations in one part of Africa, the poachers simply move to another part. And so that's where ultimately that number could keep declining, and you could end up with a species that at least in some countries goes extinct.
Adam Roberts, thank you so much for jumping on the phone. As the decision finally does come out down the road, we'll touch in again, okay?
Perfect.
All right. Thank you so much. Have a great weekend. That's Adam Roberts. And on the decision, you know, Trump says he's going to do it. Then he pulled back. I was very surprised and pleasantly surprised that the president, you know, decided let's take a little more time and really be able to back this up when we decide one way or another. We'll see what happens in the end. The Morning Show with Orion and Max coming up in just a couple of minutes here on 720 WGN. All right, it's time for me to vacate the premises. Let's head out west and say good morning to Orion Samuelson.